Thank you, Mr. Fund, for that very generous introduction. I'll tell you the truth. When I was offered this honor, my first reaction was to decline. Not because I don't like COVID, but because at least I like COVID that you can pretend that you're humble. But a public honor like this, it's hard to pretend. But I accepted it basically for three reasons. Firstly, Ein Sarvin Legodl. You don't say no. You don't refuse someone important. People who ask me represent the Israel Center, and I consider the Israel Center a very important place. A place that offers a lot of Torah, a lot of chesed, a lot of unity in the community here. And therefore, to such an organization, you don't say no. Secondly, I have a debt of gratitude to both the Israel Center and to the Orthodox Union, specifically to NCSY. I grew up in the early years of NCSY. I was a chapter president in Miami, and my wife was a national vice president of NCSY. But the main thing is that I met my wife for the first time in the NCSY office in New York. And that makes NCSY very special to me. And I noticed that my shatchanim, Rabbi and Mrs. Chaim Wasserman, are here tonight. So they can vouch for that. I also owe a hakaras hatov, a debt of gratitude to the Israel Center for giving me the opportunity of spreading Torah, of meeting very, very fine individuals who come to the weekly shiurim that I would not have met otherwise, and a shiur that started, I don't know how many years ago, but quite a few years ago. Over 20 years ago, with I think four or five women, has grown, Baruch Hashem, to hundreds of people. And it's an opportunity to give over Torah, and I appreciate that opportunity, and I have a debt of gratitude to the Israel Center. In addition, I have a very big stake in the Israel Center. My oldest daughter, Ita Rachel, is one of the pillars of the organization. And she, being my oldest, represents my sons and my daughters and my sons-in-law and daughters-in-law and my many grandchildren, who I would mention how many, but my wife will not speak to me tonight if I do. And part of the reason I accepted the honor was because I feel that it's her honor. And by accepting it, I wanted to give her that recognition that the organization that she is a pillar of is important enough for me to stand here and speak to you in front of you tonight. I want to thank all of you who have come here tonight. I'm sure that most of you are here to honor the other honorees or the organization. I know my family came because of me, and I appreciate that. And I see people from my moshav who are not wealthy people, and this is not the kind of affair that they are used to attending, and I tried to hide the fact that this is happening, and they came anyway. I think they wanted to see if it's really true. But I appreciate their being here especially, and all of you who have come here to honor the Israel Center and to honor all of the other honorees, I thank you in their name also. Before 40 years ago, I remember, I teach in the seminaries, and I tell them sometimes, you remember the Six-Day War? It was about 20 years before they were born. They say, you know, when you're getting old, when what you saw as current events is now history. But I remember I was after high school already in Telsa Yeshiva in Cleveland, and I remember the panic and the trepidation that enveloped Klal Yisrael before the Six-Day War in those weeks when Nasser Yimach Shemo V'Zichro threatened to throw every man, woman, and child here in Eretz Yisrael into the sea. And the miracles that occurred that everyone recognized. Tremendous miracles. I remember that in Tells, they permitted us during the war to listen to the radio during Bein Hasdarim. I think that was one of the biggest miracles of the war. And I remember hearing on the BBC a correspondent, not Jewish, who made the following comment. This was about the third, fourth day of the war where everybody thought that Klal Yisrael would be overrun immediately. Everything, the tables were turned and we were on our way to Damascus, to Cairo, had the Americans not stopped us. And I remember the correspondent saying with tremendous passion, he was describing the battles that were going on, and he said, this is obviously a fight between God and Allah, and God's knocking the heck out of Allah. That's how the Goyim saw it. And the tremendous hisorus, tremendous inspiration after the war. The Tshuva movement got its great shot in the arm after the Six-Day War, after Yerushalayim was once again reunited. And my Rosh Hashiva, a gifter Zatzal, said that it wasn't only a salvation for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. It was a salvation for Jews worldwide. He said, because if Chas V'Sholom, the Yishuv here in Eretz Yisrael had been overrun, then it wouldn't be more than hours before they'd be shechting Jews in Times Square. So we have a lot to be thankful for. Chazal say that it takes 40 years for a person to be only Daldas Rabo, for a person to really appreciate what his Rebbe teaches him. And the Rebbe Shalom taught us a lesson 40 years ago, but sometimes it takes 40 years to appreciate that lesson. What are we supposed to learn from it? And I think the first thing to contemplate and ponder is, why did we deserve such a merit? Why do we deserve that we should be able to sit here in Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh? We should be able to go to the Kosel HaMaravi when we choose and pour our hearts out before HaKodesh Baruch Hu, to live in Yerushalayim, something that generations would have chalished to be able to do. And we're able to do it. Why? Are we so much greater than previous generations that we merited this tremendous, tremendous chus? Why? Let me tell you what I think. There's a Medrash. The Medrash says, Rabbi Akiva Hayadorish. Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha Ubikshu ha'om l'namneim, and his students started to fall asleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. So he said to them, Marosa Esther, Shemolcha ha'meir v'yestrin b'sheva medinos. What did Esther see that enables her to rule over 127 provinces? Tavo Esther, Basdita shel Sora, Shechoyso meir v'yestrin b'sheva shonim. Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarai Menu, who lived 127 years, let her come and rule over 127 provinces. And they all woke up. What connection is there between the 127 provinces and the 127 years? And Rabbi Akiva went on. What's the Medrash mean? We know that the students of Rabbi Akiva had two faults. One is lo nagu kavod zeh bazeh. They didn't treat each other with the full amount of respect they deserved. They didn't deal with each other disrespectfully, chas v'shalom. Doesn't say nagu shelo bekavod, that they acted disrespectfully. It just says lo nagu kavod. They didn't act with the full amount of respect. And another place, the Medrash says a nehem tsara b'torasa. They were selfish with their Torah. They didn't spread it throughout Eretz Israel, throughout the Jewish people. They had a narrow vision about their Torah. Why? Maybe Rabbi Akiva's students looked at themselves and they said, who are we? They were the first generation after the destruction of the Second Temple. We know that every generation goes down. There's Yeridas HaDoros. Generations go down and down and down. There's a progression. But sometimes events cause that descent to be geometric. Much greater than just one generation. Sometimes it's 10, 15 generations at a time. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash caused such a yerida, such a descent, such a lessening of the level of the Jewish people. And Rabbi Akiva's students looked at themselves and they said, who are we compared to the previous generation that lived in the time of the Beis HaMikdash? We're nothing. And our Torah is nothing. And therefore they didn't respect themselves nor each other the way they should have. And they didn't feel that their Torah was worth spreading. Why were they wrong? What was their mistake? The Ma'abit in Sefer Beis Elokim says, who are we to think that our prayers will be answered when Mashiach will come? If Nevi'im, Tanoim, Amoraim, great Rishonim prayed the same prayers and they weren't answered, who do we think we are that we're going to be answered? He says the following. The question would be a question if one generation's prayers were going to bring Mashiach. But it doesn't work like that. It's the accumulation of the merit of all the generations together. And everything's been accomplished. 99.99% has been accomplished already by the people, the great people who came before us. All we have to do is that 0.01%. That we can do too. And he gives a famous analogy. A midget is a midget. And a giant is much taller, much greater stature than that midget. But when you put the midget on top of the giant, then the midget can reach where the giant can't, because he's standing on top of the giant. Rabbi Akiva's students looked at themselves in a vacuum. And in a vacuum, taka, they were nothing compared to the people who came before them. But they are not in a vacuum. They are not disconnected from Jewish history. Every generation may be a midget, but it's a midget standing on the back of that giant of Klal Yisrael. And therefore they were important. And their Torah was important. And that's what Rabbi Akiva told them. Rabbi Akiva was teaching and they became inactive. They wanted to go to sleep. They felt, what can we accomplish? What can we do? Who are we? Look at us compared to the generations before. And Rabbi Akiva told them, you know, Esther could have thought the same way. She was also the first generation after the first temple was destroyed. And Esther could have been just as inactive as you are. And it said, what can I do? Look at me compared to the people before. But Esther realized that she was not disconnected. Esther realized that she came from Asura Imenu, who lived 127 years. The accumulation of those 127 years made Asura Imenu. No 1 year. The accumulation of 127. And Esther realized that no one generation makes Klal Yisrael. We are a continuum from our avos till today. We are midgets, but we're midgets who stand on the shoulders of giants. And therefore, if we deserved what we are zoche to, it's not our merit. It's the merit of all the generations before. And they accomplished that we should be able to enjoy what we have been zoche, what we have merited. And that's why Yerushalayim, the Gemara says, is called Netzach. HaNetzach, say Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is attached to eternity from the beginning of Klal Yisrael, from our Avos, till Yemos HaMashiach, and everything in between, that's Yerushalayim. And it's also the place that unites all Jews, Talpios. It's the center. That is the real Israel center. Yerushalayim itself. It unites all generations, and it unites all Jews to one focus, into one continuum. And that's why we were Zocha, not in our merit, but because we are a continuum of Jewish history. I'll tell you, I think the Rabbi Shlomo is testing us. The Netziv from Balozhin says that before God changes his dealings with the world, there are many ways that God deals with the world and changes. In the desert, it was one way. When we came into Eretz Israel, it was another way. After the destruction of the temple, it was another way. And when Mashiach comes, it will be a different way. There will be many things different when Mashiach comes. And before the situation changes, before the era changes, God tests and makes a dry run to see if we're ready. One of the things that will be different when Mashiach comes, one is we will not be subjugated to the nations of the world. Shibud Malchios won't exist anymore. Secondly, we will all be in Eretz Israel with a Beis Hamikdash and all Jews together. If you look over the last 200 years, I think God has been testing us along the way on all of these things. America is a unique experience in Jewish history. The first place where, to a certain degree, a small taste of what it means not to be subjugated to the nations of the world. In America, we are not subjugated to rights conferred upon us. In America, the Jews there have inalienable rights. At least on paper. No one gives them the rights. So we're not subjugated to the nations of the world in such a democracy. So the Ribbono Shel Olam, through America, tested us. How's it going to be when you're not subjugated to the nations of the world, when you're free? Will you be free to practice Torah? Or you will use the freedom to run away from Torah? Some people are passing the test, and some people are not passing the test. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam 59 years ago gave us the ability to return to Eretz Israel, a small taste of what Eretz Israel really is. And he's testing us. How do you handle it? Will you appreciate it? Will you treat it properly? Will you want to live there? Some people are passing, some people are not. And then, 40 years ago, the Rabbanim gave us back Makomos HaKadoshim, the holy places. How do we deal with them? Do we appreciate them? Do we understand what they're all about? Do we want more? Do we treat them properly? Some people are passing, and some people aren't. And then the Rabbanim brought Jews from all over the world, all different kinds of Jews, into Eretz Israel. And we have to learn how to live together and tolerate each other. And again, some people are passing and some people aren't. I just hope that God grades on a curve. It was mentioned that Yerushalayim is a composite name. Shem ben Noah saw Yerushalayim and he called it Shalem, complete, perfect. He saw the potential perfection that Yerushalayim represents. Avraham Avinu called it Yireh Yeroyah. That's where you come face to face with God and He comes face to face with you. You get to see what God wants of you and He gets to see if you're fulfilling what you're supposed to be fulfilling. God, wanting to make peace, used both names and called it Yerushalayim. But Bechori didn't use either name. Yiru is not Yireh or Yeroyah, and Shalayim is not Shalim. And besides that, he should have called it Shalim Yireh, because Shem came first. So where did God get this idea of making a composite name in the opposite order and changing both words? Well, the non-Jewish concept is you are with harmony with nature. That's how a non-Jew serves God. He remains in harmony. Seven mitzvahs. The natural world. Doesn't have to improve anything. He just has to not distort nature. Remain in harmony with nature. That's why the non-Jewish worship is a matseva. One stone. The way that it's made in nature. We have a mizbeach. We build an altar. We have to take nature and improve upon it. We have to sublimate it. We have to elevate it. So what Shem saw as perfect, Avraham said, no. Here is the place where you have to be dynamic. We have to come face to face with God and know how you can elevate this world. That's what Yerushalayim, it gives you potential. But it's not the perfection in its final state. First comes the Yireh, and then the Yeroyah. You have to see and you have to be seen. So God therefore said, we're going to get the Jewish name to Yerushalayim. That the perfection is not there to begin with. You have to reach perfection. So we'll start with the Yireh and Yeroyah. But in order not to make it either Yireh or Yeroyah, he took the Aleph and the Hay and made it into a vav. And now it represents both Yireh and Yeroyah. Does everybody want to read it? The vav contains both the Aleph and the Hay. So it's Yeru. And now it's not Shalem, just one perfection. It's the plural. It's perfections. Because what Shem saw as the material, physical perfection that Yerushalayim gives, Avraham said, we can take it and sublimate it and make it into a spiritual perfection too. There's two perfections here. Shalu Shalom Yerushalayim. We have a mitzvah to seek that perfection. It's not something that comes automatically. You have to seek it out. You have to go for it. You have to work for it. The word netzach does not only mean to be enduring and something that is forever, eternal. But netzach also means lenatzeach, to win a battle, to be victorious. If you want Yerushalayim to be connected to the past and the future, and the presence of everyone's here, then you need to fight for it. Some people are fighting in Bukin and Brussels, in Kovalim, in Yerushalayim, and adding Torah, filling and saturating the air here with Torah, Milchamta Shel Torah, the war that's Torah, and that fills Yerushalayim with spiritual holiness. And there are those that fight to make sure that the character of Yerushalayim is maintained, that things don't happen here that totally destroy and distort what Yerushalayim is. They're also fighting battles. And there are people who are fighting the battles to capture the hearts of Jews and bring them back to Torah. That's what the Israel Center is involved in. Spreading Torah, capturing hearts, fighting and making that war victorious. Yitz Hashem, if we understand what Yerushalayim can be, and it's not that, it's only Yerushalayim today. It's not Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim Shalmala is not here. And as long as that's the case, then Yerushalayim is desolate. As we say on Tisha B'Av, it's still desolate because the Shechinah is not here and the Beis HaMikdash is not here. But if we work hard enough to try and make our lives lives of holiness in every sphere, and that's what we're supposed to learn from Yerushalayim, then we'll be able to see the day soon when, as we'll say on Shavuos, Na'ale v'neiroe v'nishtachave v'fonecho, we'll be able to go up to the Beis HaMikdash, not to the Kosel Hamarot, but to the Beis HaMikdash itself, on this Shavuos, the Dinyan by Yishlishi, the Diaskol Tzedek Meheru Yonim.